Good morning, Carroll County. This is Commissioner Tom Gordon in District 3, and today I have a guest with me. I have the Executive Director of the Carroll County Public Library, Andrea Bursler. Thank you for being with me on the podcast this morning.
I am delighted to be here.
It's great to have you in. I know you're incredibly busy over at the public library and all the amazing events you have and just everything that's going on. Tell us a little bit about the Carroll County Public Library, if you could.
Well, Carroll County Public Library is a busy place. We have a wide range of resources that we make available to, you know, the public, but we also have a wide range of programs that we do as well. In fact, the end of this month is, of course, this is October, and there's lots of Halloween and ghostly things going on. We have the Ghost Walk in Westminster. We have the Ghosts of Gettysburg as a program. We've got a few other. We have an escape room that's based off of Sleepy Hollow in one of the branches, and Dungeons and Dragons program. So I've heard of that as well. So we do we have a lot going on. You can always discover something new.
That's awesome. I remember doing the Ghost Walk as a kid. I might have to come out and check it out again and see what new and interesting possibilities that might be included.
See if there's any new ghosts.
It could be. You never know. So could you give us some background on the Carroll County Public Library? When was it founded, and how did that come about?
Well, it's a real interesting story, and the funny thing is that we just did an article for this in the last newsletter, so I was able to have all that information available. It turns out that library service in Carroll County is actually 161 years old. The Westminster Public Library, which was founded by Reverend Monroe and Dr. Billingsley, was back in 1863, and it was a subscription and fees that kind of supported it, and it was in a room in the Odd Fellows Hall. Then it moved to the Times Building, then to the Wance Building, but as of 1940s, it was still just a one-room library. Then the Davis family came in, and in 1949, they started the Davis Library, which moved into the old Methodist Church, I believe.
Yes.
And it was there for a long time. In 1958 was when Carroll County Public Library actually started as a system. And it started with the Westminster branch and what was known as the Northeast branch, which was in Hampstead. Hmm. And those were the first two branches. Mount Airy opened in 1965. Eldersburg opened in 1968, Tawnytown opened in 1969, and then Finksburg was, of course, a little late to the party in 2009. But the libraries were all first locally generated, and then they joined the community. So it's very much a community-focused library.
That's incredible. It's some amazing history. And while we're talking about the history of the public library in Carroll County, obviously the Westminster branch was not once located downtown. Can you tell me a little bit of the history of that and what was previously in that location?
Well, the location where the library is was the Catholic Church at one time. In fact, the building adjacent to the library where we have our outreach department and some of our trucks and all was a rectory. And the church had all kinds of trouble. From what I have heard, their steeple collapsed, they were struck by lightning, and then the building itself had structural issues. So they've moved, and of course, their St. John's is up on the hill now.
Yes.
And the county acquired the land and put the Westminster branch library there in 1983, maybe.
That sounds about right.
And that building opened then. Basement was empty.
Mm-hmm.
We used it as storage until recently. But the library itself was there at that time, and it's been renovated a couple of times, but it's pretty much still the same footprint.
It was interesting, and just for everybody listening, a few months ago, you were kind enough to give me a tour of the building, and as somebody that grew up as a kid and got to experience that library over a number of decades, obviously the library, like you said, the footprint's pretty much the same, you know. Various things have changed in relationship to type of shelving and so forth and so on. But it was very fascinating to get a behind-the-scenes look and see what the rectory became. Because, you know, for some reason, I never really thought about that additional section of the property. And it's just very well utilized. And I thought it was quite impressive how your staff and everyone utilizes that area and just what goes on behind the scenes that the public is not aware of?
It's a very active part of the library. Most people don't think about it. They might see our bookmobiles out on the street, or they might see them at a community event. Maybe their children see them when they come and serve. They do story times and programming at the daycares all across the county. but they don't really think about where they go at night and what happens and how the books get on the bookmobiles. So yes, the outreach department, which is in that side building, is a busy place full of resources and full of equipment and full of very busy people.
Yeah, I can't get over that, like, to just see that. And of course, you know, years ago you had the computer lab when that was a big deal in the 80s. And of course, that was a big, large room within the center of the library. And then, of course, now, given, you know, the changes in technology, you have smaller computers. And then, you know, the one thing that really struck me when I came in that day for the tour, you know, various services people don't realize that are available. The library system allows people to use the printers. And, you know, we might assume at times that everybody has a printer at home, but clearly that's not always the case, or maybe it's not convenient. So what other kind of services and so forth does the library offer to the public?
We have a wide range of things we call services, and they're not necessarily traditional library things, but they're things that make the life of our community a little more convenient. So we do have printers at all the libraries. If your printer runs out of ink, you can come and print your stuff. We also do passport services at the North Carroll branch and the Eldersburg branch, and you can walk in. They will walk you through the application process. You can have your passport picture taken, and the whole thing is put together and sent off from there. We do notary services at all of our branches for free. We also do, with the addition of Exploration Commons, we now have the availability to do large format printing. So if you wanted to print a poster, that's available, and that service. We do 3D printing. You can send your files to the library. It'll get printed and shipped back to whatever branch you want to have pick it up, where you want to pick it up. So there are a great deal of services that we provide that, like I said, they're not really what you would think of as a library.
Sure.
Tax pay. You can come and pay your county taxes and your water bill at the library. Just makes life a little more convenient.
No, absolutely. So you're more of a, in many ways, while you are a library, and yes, there are books, you're almost sort of a destination location for so many other services and things within the county and the community as a whole.
Absolutely. We often are referred to as a community hub, and anything that we can do to make life a little easier, we definitely try to add it in.
I think that's definitely a poignant choice of words, that you are definitely a community hub without question. October is Friends of the Library Month. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, every good library, every well-run library that I know of has a friends group, and ours is no exception. People can join the friends. I know all the commissioners are friends of the library, and it's a great way to demonstrate your support for the library and possibly even get involved. Our friends show up at a lot of our larger events and volunteer, help out the staff, help greet people. It's a great way to connect with other people who like the library, like to read, like to be involved, and as I said, show your support for the Carroll County Public Library.
No, that's incredible, and I'm sure there'll be some interesting things coming up out of that in the near future.
Absolutely.
You know, we're getting towards the end of 2024. Anything really interesting on the horizon for the rest of the calendar year that we don't know about yet, or?
For the rest of the calendar year, we're wrapping up Adult Battle of the Books. We have one more to go, our Battle of the Books After Hours, which are hugely successful and which filled up inside of a week.
Wow.
So we'll be bringing that one back next year. For the end of this month, we actually have quite a number of programs, as I mentioned earlier, and we have lots of baking and cooking and making programs at Exploration Commons in preparation for the holidays. In fact, one of the classes that's coming up that week is a tumbler engraving class, which everybody is always looking for. So you can bring your favorite coffee or water tumbler in and learn how to engrave it with whatever it is you want to have on there.
Very cool.
It's very cool. And if you want to disconnect, we've got some yoga classes coming up at some of the branches. And we also have a program on the religious records of Maryland, which could be really interesting if you're into studying about history and genealogy and some of the early settlers in this area of Maryland.
Very impressive, which kind of leads to my next question I was going to ask you. With the library, does it host or house any historical items or anything county related?
We don't have a lot of historical items. We work very closely with both the Genealogical Society and the Historical Society of Carroll County. They are two really strong organizations, and rather than trying to duplicate their work, we work with them. And so they have primarily have the historic and rare items and artifacts. What we tend to focus more on are things people can actually use. So instead of historical items, we have fishing poles and rubber stamps and GoPros and games and all that sort of thing that people can come in and borrow.
Wow, so I can actually borrow a fishing pole.
You can borrow a fishing pole, yes.
Amazing.
Absolutely. It was a Department of Natural Resources grant that we got years ago, and we find that a lot of parents and grandparents use it when their kids want to fish in one of the local fishing tournaments, but they don't necessarily want to buy a fishing pole and have it sit the rest of the year. Or the grandkids come in and visit, or friends come in and visit. You can borrow them for a week, and they're well-kept, they're well-maintained, and they're completely free.
That's remarkable. Any like hardware or tools if I want to come and do a home project?
No, we have looked into it because, believe it or not, our neighbors to the south in Howard County have a tool library.
Okay.
And that may be on the horizon at some point in time in the future. We would have to renovate a building.
Okay.
But it is very useful to have because, again, buying it is expensive, maintaining it is expensive, and then it takes up space, which a lot of times now people just don't want to store things.
No, that makes perfect sense. So, maybe there's a tagline down the road, constructing with Carroll County Public
there
Library.
You go.
And get
there
some hard
go.
Hats out. Yeah.
I like it.
So with it being October, you and I decided for this discussion on the podcast that we were both going to pick a book relating to October in some fashion. What book did you pick and why?
Well, I was going to reread Frankenstein because that's always a great traditional October book. But I had a friend recommend a book entitled The Library at Night. The author's name is Alberto Manguel. And I just thought, well, this should be really interesting. And I know this is a podcast, but the cover of it is somebody sitting in a dark, dark wood in a lounge chair with a single light. So I thought, oh, this could be this, don't judge a book by its cover, but this could be interesting. It turns out that it is wonderful for a librarian. It is an essay about libraries, just a whole series of essays about how libraries were constructed, how they're organized, even about the myths of libraries, like the Library at Alexandria and what it really was and what we know, and the legends around it.
Interesting.
So they're all short chapters. Each one is an essay. I'm really enjoying reading it, but I think you have to be a bit of a library geek to get into something like this. It's not the spooky October thing.
Okay. The cover kind of looked like it.
The cover looks like
it.
It
almost looks
like
a movie poster for a horror film.
It really does. I'm kind of waiting for one of those things to, come out from behind the tree like you see on the modern horror things. But it's really enjoyable. So, yes, it wasn't a horror book, but I am enjoying reading it. And I guess I'm going to have to make sure we have it in our collection now because my friend loaned me this copy.
That might be a good idea. Maybe somebody's going to want to go check
it
out.
They very well might.
I mean, the cover intrigues me just looking at the imagery.
It's real. It's very classic horror.
It really is. So, for me, when I was looking for books, and of course it being October, which, Halloween falling into October, I had to go back and kind of pick what I consider a classic, which was published by the Carroll County Public Library, which was the book Ghosts and Legends of Carroll County, compiled by Jesse Glass, Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, a little bit of history mixed into this. As a kid, I remember picking this book off the shelf, the original printing. This, of course, is a later reprint, but it was a great book. You've obviously got the Ghost Walk coming up. So if anybody's interested in some of the interesting and fascinating little tidbits of historic Carroll County and I'd say ghosts and whatever else that might fall into that, this is definitely an interesting book. It's a short read. There's a lot of very, very short stories, could be just a handful of pages, but you have various stories, which includes the Legend of God's Well, which is located behind the Historical Society of Carroll County on Main Street. We have the Ballad of Lee Masters, which, of course, Lee Masters was a interesting and I would almost say controversial figure in Carroll County history. Had a good conversation a number of years back with Jay Grabiel, who used to be the executive director a number of years back, or actually should say several decades back at the Historical Society, and his take on the Lee Masters stories or ghost stories, whatever you want to call them, versus the possible reality was quite interesting. Lee Masters was a property owner, was very negatively written about in local and oral history, But Jay's perspective was that part of that had to do with him being English, not really living in this county, and that maybe a bit of that might have been overly dramatized to the point of alienating him as a person because he wasn't part of the community, had nothing to do with, you know, the people that lived here. But the one story that kind of stood out for me, and of course there's a lot of great stories here, there's the Great Westminster Fire of 1885, which is an interesting tale as well, but it was a tale about an individual named Big Tom. So Christmas Eve of 1844, there was a complaint was lodged against Big Tom Parks for disturbing the peace. The sheriff and two full-grown deputies took him and locked him up, and he was in the old jail here in Westminster. The book notes that he was a desperate character who came up from Tennessee about 1840, was just not a ideal individual in the community, once was arrested for stealing hay, and once for hitting a woman. And of course, Christmas is a grim time in the jail, and you know, families were visiting inmates on Christmas Day, but he was there by himself. They were planning to send him to the Baltimore Penitentiary, but on Christmas night, he cut his throat with a knife. So he killed himself. There was a local famous doctor who did scientific research named Dr. Zollicoffer, who was in Carroll County. Besides being a doctor, he invented some fascinating home remedies, which earned him praise. But he was also involved with a variety of different scientific thought processes and other issues. But he wanted to study phrenology, which for anyone that doesn't know, that's studying the bumps on someone's head, and there's the belief that you could learn how they thought and other concepts relating to that. Well, they allowed him to take Big Tom's head, and Dr. Zollicoffer had an office in Tawnytown. So Tom was buried without his head, and of course the ghost tale goes on to say that over the years Carroll Countyans have encountered a ghostly figure of a decapitated man walking the grounds of the old jail property with his arms outstretched as if in wonderment and pain, you know, eternally searching for his head. I don't know if anyone from the sheriff's department may have run into him, but I will tell you that there is definitely interesting things that I've heard over the years with in relationship to the old jail.
Westminster's version of Sleepy Hollow.
It very well could be. I don't think he has a horse, though. But the one interesting little tidbit I'll throw into this that's not typically known to the public is that Dr. Zollicoffer, besides having an office in Tawnytown, had a second office in Westminster. So purely speculation, but have to wonder, did he go to his office in Westminster first with the head before traveling to Tawnytown back in the 1840s? For everybody listening, interesting little fact I'm going to share. The childhood home I grew up in actually was the house that the second office was in.
Oh.
Now, I don't know of anything specific. We're not exactly sure where in the home the office might have been, but we kind of had a theory on that based on the layout of the house, but never saw anything too interesting that connected to the story, so maybe it just went straight to Tawnytown, but definitely a odd little fun fact of Carroll County and Westminster history, to say the least. But I'll have to check out your book at some point. That does sound interesting. And like I said, for anybody, Ghosts and Legends of Carroll County is a great book. And you know, the library's got so many wonderful books to check out and read. Is there any books that is, I mean, I know this kind of ebbs and flows with maybe popularity, but are there any like tried and true books of longevity that Carroll County Library is constantly getting requests for over the years?
Constantly is probably not a good word for that.
Okay.
Because they do ebb and flow. And people discover and rediscover mm-hmm. classics based upon something that might happen in culture.
Sure.
So you get a popular actor or actress or a celebrity figure who mentions a book, well, all of a sudden then we have a wait list for
mm-hmm.
it. Or a movie comes out and it references the book and suddenly we've got, you know, every time a new Jane Austen movie comes out, all the Jane Austen books go out.
Sure.
And then there are the books that are written behind that. So Star Wars, Avengers, all the there are a whole series of books behind them now. But
yes.
They all came out after the movies. And so there's this cyclical phenomenon of books feeding movies and movies feeding books. So no, there's really not any one particular
mm-hmm.
book that I can say this book always goes out.
Sure.
Which is why that we tend to keep books for more than 6 months if they don't go out We have a whole cycle for how we analyze and evaluate what's in the collection because we only have so much room.
No, absolutely.
And there's always new things coming out that people want to read.
No, and that makes sense. And I think that's one thing the average person probably doesn't really give much thought to, which is you do have, in some case, defined space. It's not unlimited. And of course, a book is a physical, tangible object that has weight to it. And where do you keep it? So.
Well, that's very true. And I was looking up some of the stats between you and I was looking at some of the stats for what we did in 2023. And just so people have an idea of the scope of the library, we have in our collection over 670,000 items.
Wow.
Now, of those, about 335,000 are actual books, printed physical books in a location. So we really hope people take a lot of them out, because if they ever all came home at the same time, I'm not sure what we would do with them. But then of that, we also have about 228,000 that are digital items.
Okay.
So people can borrow them, but they don't take any real space.
Sure.
And yet here we are, Carroll County, and we have the highest circulation per capita in the state, which means if you take all the material in the library and you divide it by all the people that live in our county borrows more materials from the library than anybody else does.
That's incredible.
About 17 items per person every year.
That's incredible.
And about half of our population here has library cards. So even if it's only the people with library cards taking things out, now you're looking at 34 items per person who has a library card.
Wow.
And that's a lot of reading.
That's incredible, considering, you know, our population versus some of the other counties.
Yes,
we're at 173,000 or so that's incredible.
And we're ahead by quite a bit. The next closest library is about 12 items per person.
Wow.
And that's down in Howard County, and we work very hard to stay ahead of them.
That's amazing. That is truly amazing. I'm impressed. So Carroll County loves to read. That might be a new tagline maybe you all should run with or something.
I like it. We might have to.
I think that works. So obviously one of the big gems we have at Westminster, of course, is Exploration Commons. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came to be, and you know what does the space, this remarkable space, offer to everybody?
Well, Exploration Commons is 14,000 square feet of makerspace and commercial kitchen and meeting room space in the basement of the Westminster branch. The idea for this actually came out of a project, I believe it was called Envisioning Carroll 2030.
Okay.
That my predecessor, Lynn Wheeler, was a part of. And in those discussions, it came up, we had 14,000 square feet of nothing in the basement of the library. What were we going to do with it to serve the community? So they had community meetings, they did focus groups, and the three ideas that came out were: we need more meeting space, we want a maker space where we can create things, and we want a kitchen, which was kind of an unexpected turn in that story. So that's what was planned, and I came in during the planning phase. We built during the pandemic, and that's an interesting story. And we put a kitchen in a basement of a building, which is also a really interesting story. Commercial kitchen, because we have the vents and everything.
Sure.
But what has happened is that the community has embraced this area where they can come in, they can create, they can learn from our experts on staff, but they also learn from each other. And they work collaboratively in a lot of these classes. And it has turned into a wonderful community space of give and take in all sorts of directions. The other interesting thing is it's intergenerational. So we have a lot of classes where that people who are in high school or even middle school come in, but then we also have seniors and retired people in the same class, learning the same skills and teaching each other, which
that's
is
awesome.
Really cool to watch.
I mean, that's just so cool to see a community come together, whether it's cooking or whether it's using 3D printers that you have or
absolutely.
Whatever.
Absolutely.
And I know your cooking classes are impossible to get into.
Yeah, I think you have better luck buying a Taylor Swift concert ticket at the moment. I actually have said, look, I'll just come and teach them so I can be in a class. But people love to learn new things, and they love to learn with their friends. It's the same as reading. We have a culture here where that reading is social. And not only do we read books, but we talk about them. We go to book groups and talk about them. We go to author events and talk about them. Well, it's the same for the learning that goes on at Exploration Commons. People want to share it with each other. So our family cooking classes are sold out right away. And bring your friends, and you get four of you go to a class together. Well, how much more fun could you have than to be there and make fun of each other while you're learning a new cooking skill?
Absolutely. And I mean, I've seen the kitchen. The kitchen's incredible.
It's amazing. It really is. We were so excited when it started actually coming together, and we had all of this amazing equipment. But the most important part is that we have the most amazing staff, and the staff who work in Exploration Commons and in our branches, they are truly dynamic. And they make the space. They really do.
No, you're absolutely correct. I mean, I've been lucky enough to, you know, and fortunate enough to interact with a number of the staff down there. And it's just, you know, whether you're a seasoned veteran and whatever you're wanting to work on, or you're a complete novice, I mean, they're just so able and willing to help people. And of course, the other thing is, you know, talking about like the cooking classes, you all have brought in a variety of local talent. One that I know probably sells out in advance, if that's humanly possible, is, of course, when you've got Collision Course with Tony and Ashley coming
in. Oh, absolutely. And I know they're closing in on opening their place on Main Street, which we're all very excited for. But yes, we've had them. We've had the owners of Covalent Spirit come in.
Jen and Drew. Yep.
We had Garrett Hoover and his wife.
Oh, that's awesome.
Came in. She is from Brazil, and so she did a whole class on Brazilian cooking.
Oh, that's great.
Which was really, yes, we have a lot of local chefs who bring this great diverse culture of food. You can travel all over the world and never leave Exploration Commons.
That's amazing, because food is just such a connector for people.
It is. People love to come together over food. Mm. And we all love to eat, so.
Yep. Can't argue with you there. You're making me hungry now, and we're going to be getting, while we're recording this, we're getting closer to lunchtime, so now I got to figure out what I'm going to eat today. But so are there any other locations in the state like Exploration Commons?
There are almost no locations like Exploration Commons in the country.
Really?
The Exploration Commons makerspace is based off of a university model, so you would have to go to the University of Maryland or some other institution like that to find the caliber of equipment that we have. And we have a virtual reality lab, so you can learn to write the programming for virtual reality and then go in the lab and test the programming you've written. It's that caliber of experience. When you add the kitchen to it, it makes it truly unique. There are some public libraries that have kitchens that teach or have kitchens that they make available to, say, food trucks and that sort of thing. But the combination of those two spaces, along with the large meeting room and the other facilities there, make Explorations truly a one-of-a-kind space.
That's awesome. So we're not just a Carroll County gem. We're a state gem, and we're really a national gem.
We really are.
That's amazing.
We really are. And it's wonderful when people come in and you see their eyes light up, and they look around the space, and they simply can't believe that this is open for free in a public library. You don't have to buy a subscription. You don't have to pay a fee to get in. You just come in, and if you provide your material for a lot of the equipment, use of the equipment is absolutely free as well as the training to use it.
That's incredible.
Which is sort of mind-blowing.
That is. I mean, when you think of the world we live in today and how some things work, and, you know, I think, you know, for anybody just to have the opportunity, but be it somebody that's a novice and wants to learn, or even somebody maybe they can't afford the equipment. I mean, what a great community opportunity.
We have several businesses that have come in and started using the equipment, so they don't have to buy it. They can use that money for something else in their business plan. We have a handheld scanner, which is an amazing piece. We can actually scan a person and put them in virtual reality, and it is high caliber, so people use it to build prototypes and also to scan old pieces that they can no longer purchase, and then they can recreate them using the router or the printers in space itself.
I've actually played with the scanners. I was over one day.
It's very cool.
It's very cool, and there definitely is a skill set to that. Wasn't bad at it, but I'm definitely not a pro yet. So
there's a lot of patience with using that. Yes.
It's an interesting process. And I mean, I never would have imagined a number of years back that we'd have the ability to do and create things in that fashion. While we're talking about the library, obviously Carroll County Public Library has a, you know, a board of directors.
Yes.
Can you give me just some information about that? And then, you know, obviously we have a lot of people that love breeding. They have an interest in the library system. How does somebody get to be a member of the board of directors?
So our board of directors is limited to 7.
Okay.
Most people don't realize that Maryland has a very elegantly organized system of public libraries, similar to the public schools. So every county has its own public library. And there's a lot of laws about how those libraries will be constructed, how their boards will be put together, and all of that. So we have 7 members of our board. We try and have 1 from every location where we have a branch, and then we have a member at large.
Okay.
And a board, like many other boards, we have a chair and a vice chair and a secretary treasurer. We meet about 10 times a year, once a month. And if, since you happen to bring it up about being on the board, we are currently looking for a new board member. We have one of our members who will be, her term will be expiring in December, and we're looking, and it's an at-large position.
Okay.
So anyone who resides in Carroll County and is not a minor can apply to be on the board. And there are all kinds, there's all kinds of information on our website, which is library.carr.org. And the applications are right there on the front page. You can go there. You can see what the qualifications are, when we meet, what we expect of our board members. It is a participating board. It's a working board. And we have, our meetings are, like I said, once a month, about 2-2.5 hours, and then some additional work in the middle. But if you're interested, that's the place to go. Read about it and fill out an application and send us your resume. The board's in the process right now of accepting those.
Okay. And then I guess, you know, let's say you have a desire to be involved, but maybe a board's not your thing. You you want to be a little less formal.
A little less.
I mean, you know, how can the general public get involved? You know, whether obviously you have events they can support and be involved with. You know, is there any other kind of support or opportunity for people to engage in, you know, want to be a part of the library system?
Absolutely. We are fond of saying that we are always glad to see donations of time, treasure, and talent. So if you want to volunteer, you can stop in at your local branch. There's volunteers there that do all sorts of things, help with some of the local book sales, help with putting books back on the shelf, help with some of the programming. Same with Exploration Commons. If you have a talent for something in their sphere with the equipment or the kitchen, stop in and talk to them. You can join the Friends. The Friends are our core of volunteers we pull for our, a lot of our larger events, like the author events.
Okay.
But yes, we're always open to, and then of course, people who want to support our events. We take in sponsorships for the Battle of the Books, which will be coming up again in the spring for the children's battles, for our summer reading program, for our after-hours battles, and several of our other programs as well. So those opportunities are always listed on our website. You can go there anytime.
Okay, now that's awesome. I think because, you know, I know people once in a while they have that question, but they maybe don't take the opportunity or the time to, you know, reach out and maybe look for the info. So I thought it'd be good to mention that.
I appreciate
that. And this just totally came to me out of the blue as we were talking, but Battle of the Books, how many participants is it per team?
The children's battles this year were right around 1,400 participants.
Okay.
About 200 teams, and we had 9 battles.
Wow.
We have 6 elementary battles, 1 middle school battle, and then a pair of battles for our private parochial homeschool students, 1 elementary level and 1 middle school level.
Very nice.
And we get all kinds of people who come in and help MC and help work with the students. And I think we had close to 4,000 attendees at all the battles together.
Wow.
Which is parents and grandparents and siblings and everything else who come out and cheer these kids on. It is the environment, the atmosphere is like going to a basketball playoff game.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, obviously, I've been and I've attended, and just the energy in the room is just phenomenal.
It is. It is. It's absolutely amazing. The kids are excited. They're ready to compete. They've done their homework, and they've got their great team names. Some of them are amazing, and their costumes.
The costumes, yeah. Oh, my, the costumes have been incredible.
They really get into it, but it's a fun way for students to want to read as a group. Again, it's the first step in us creating a social environment around books, which encourages kids to stay reading their whole life.
which is incredibly and so needed. Yes. With the adult teams, though, is that like 5 or 6 members a team? What's mm-hmm. the average? I mean, is there an average or is there a set number?
There's a set number. We allow 5.
Okay.
And you can have a team with 3, 4, or 5.
Okay.
And you register them. But I will tell you the teams that have 5 are traditionally the ones that win.
Okay. That's good to know.
And it's set up very similar to the children's, only there's only 5 books to read instead of 10 for adults. Because our books are longer and there's a lot more information in them. And we've had one at Flood Zone, and then the other two are in at 1623 at the brewery.
Okay, nice.
So, and they're always sold out. And I will say that every time we bring up Battle of the Books After Hours in his presence, Ted reminds us that his team was the first winning team of the very first Battle of the Books After Hours. And then we remind Ted that he had a team of ringers because he had someone from Penguin Random House and the retired director of the library on his team.
So he had a stacked deck on his team.
He did. He was very smart and very selective. Hmm. And they were the first team to win. They get medals just like the kids, which is they very excited about. And then our partners at Likely Story Bookstore give out gift cards and books and all sorts of other things.
So just a crazy thought, and this all occurred to me within the last couple minutes. So you said it's 5 people max per team.
Yes.
And the adult Battle of Books is wrapping up, so there won't be anything till next fall.
Correct.
I'm not sure how everybody's going to feel about this idea, but I'll throw it out and see if you want to run with it. What about picking the 5 county commissioners as a team? In having each municipality put a team together for an adult Battle of the Books. I think that would be quite the challenge, but it could be fun.
I think that would be quite the challenge, and I think people would enjoy it very much. It's really interesting to see when people get together around books, because oftentimes what happens is they start to enjoy one another's conversation, and some of those differences go away and the similarities come to the surface. We've had Judge Titus and Judge DiLeonardo as judges.
That's awesome.
And MCs at these battles. So I think that if the county commissioners would sort of like to throw the gauntlet down a little bit and say they think that maybe they could take on some of the municipalities, I would wager some of the mayors in the area might want to
I think it's a possibility, and maybe we should let Ted get back involved, but he just can't use the ringers he had last time. But yeah, we'll have to see. I think this has potential.
I like it. I think it could be a lot of fun. The signups for Battle of the Books After Hours will be in the spring. They usually come out in March. There'll be lots of social media and publications about that. And I will make sure that our Battle of the Books After Hours team has this idea on their, you know.
You heard it here first, folks. We might have a all-star Battle of the Books next year. We'll see what happens. But I appreciate you coming in today. And as always, a pleasure.
I enjoyed it very much. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.